ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Tuesday, the 16th of April. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns has a simple request this morning. He's urging people to act with kindness and respect. His plea follows a stabbing at an Assyrian Orthodox church in the city's southwest last night. The bishop presiding over a service there was allegedly attacked. Other worshippers were also injured. A teenager is in custody over the incident. The service was being live streamed. A crowd surrounded the church and police who were sent there to ensure calm were allegedly attacked. The capital has already been on edge following the massacre at Bondi Junction on the weekend. Michael Edwards has this report.
It's a shocking video. An Assyrian Orthodox Christian priest is delivering a sermon to his followers at Christ the Good Shepherd Church in southwestern Sydney. A figure in black then jumps into frame. He starts to attack Bishop Mari Emanuel with a sharp object before people rush to his help. Bishop Emanuel stabbed repeatedly. The attacker has been identified as a 15-year-old boy who's not a regular church attendee. Acting Assistant Commissioner Andrew Holland described what happened when police arrived.
About 10 past 7 this evening, Fairfield Police were called to a job at church in relation to reports of people being stabbed. Upon arrival, police identified two church parishioners had been stabbed by a 15-year-old male. The other members of the church had then apprehended the young male and held him down until the police arrived. Two members of the church were then conveyed to hospital by ambulance. Police were in the process of removing the young person from the church when it was identified that a large crowd had gathered outside.
Hundreds of members of Sydney's Assyrian community were angry. One of their religious leaders had been attacked. One community member, Zena, spoke to the ABC.
Actually, I was at home and I just had a call and someone sent me a video and I saw our bishop being stabbed in his face and we just ran away and we come here to see what's happening.
The police who arrested the teen at the scene were forced to barricade themselves inside the church for several hours. Dozens of other police were deployed to hold back the crowd as the mood worsened. Projectiles were thrown. Two officers were injured.
The crowd continued to build an emotional response to what took place in the church. A public order incident developed, requiring police from all regions across Sydney. Upwards of 100 police and more than 30 police vehicles attending, special resources and police whole air attending.
The president of the Assyrian National Council, Hermes Shaheen, spoke to AM shortly after the incident.
The news was shocking to all of us. The assault on Bishop Emanuel brings back painful memories of persecution and violence that the Assyrians have endured historically back home, whether in Syria or Iraq or Iran or Turkey.
Late last night, the New South Wales Premier Chris Minns convened a meeting of government officials and leaders representing religious communities in Western Sydney. Mr. Minns says the group of 11 endorsed and supported a unanimous condemnation of violence in any form. Murray Norman is the Chief Executive of Faith New South Wales.
In my time, I can never remember anything like this. I couldn't even believe what I was actually seeing.
New South Wales police say the male arrested at the scene has been taken to an undisclosed location and that those stabbed suffered non-life-threatening injuries and were treated by paramedics before being taken to hospital.
Michael Edwards there. And if this story has raised concerns for you or anyone you know, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14. As more details emerge about the massacre at Bondi Junction last weekend, some women are asking what they can do to better protect themselves in public places. Police are investigating why Joel Couchy appeared to deliberately target women during the attack at the popular shopping centre. Five women and a man were killed in the incident. Catherine Gregory reports.
Flags flown half-mast and a black ribbon projected over the lit-up sails of Sydney's Opera House. Signs of solidarity for the families and friends of the six people killed in Saturday's stabbing attack in the city's east. While in Bondi Junction, just outside the Westfield Shopping Centre where the tragedy occurred, by makeshift memorial of flowers, people mourn the victims.
Such a beautiful woman. Why does it happen?
This woman knew Pekria Dashia, a 55-year-old artist and designer who originally came from Georgia.
She was such a lovely lady. She loved art. She used to sit there and sketch people and everything. I just can't believe it. It's just shocking everyone.
Her daughter Daisy comes to the shopping centre almost every day with her young child. She can't stop thinking about 38-year-old Ashley Good, who died after throwing her 9-month-old baby into strangers' arms to be saved.
My mother, myself, to hear that she passed away, like, really, like, got me bad.
Ashley and Pekria are two of the 5 women killed by Joel Cauchy. 25-year-old Dawn Singleton, 47-year-old mother of 2 Jade Young, and Chinese international student 27-year-old Yishuan Chung were also murdered. New South Wales Police Commissioner Karen Webb says it's obvious offender Joel Cauchy targeted women and avoided men. A Change.org petition has been circulating since the attacks, asking for the right for women who have no criminal record to be able to carry pepper spray to protect themselves. Sharon has mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, she wants her daughter to be able to defend herself.
But I also hate the thought of a place in society that we have to walk out to a shopping centre protecting ourselves, but it is becoming a reality.
Victorian mother Jade Howard is behind the petition.
I've just connected with so many women that are done hearing and witnessing this violence against women, and we want the option to protect ourselves.
There's also questions about whether there needs to be heightened security, including a stronger police presence in shopping centres. Security guard, 30-year-old Faraz Tahira, was also killed by Joel Cauchy.
He used to be one of our customers, like regular customers.
Michael, who owns a restaurant near the Westfield, came to the floral tribute to pay his respects.
And it's really sad, come to think about it, he was a refugee. He came in to be safe, to have a life, to have a future, and then it's all gone in a couple of seconds.
The centre will reopen once the victims' families have an opportunity to visit it.
Catherine Gregory there. Joel Cauchy's mental health seems a likely factor in the Bondi Junction stabbings. Any guest has taken a look at whether Australia has enough resources to help people with psychotic tendencies.
While expressing her despair and empathy for her son's victims and their families, Joel Cauchy's mum, Michelle, also described earlier, better days.
We are just ordinary people who brought up our son as best we could. His teachers loved him. He was top of the class. He worked hard. He had lots of friends until he got sick.
Diagnosed at 17, he was medicated until his 30s when, wanting relief from side effects, Michelle Cauchy says her son slowly stopped taking the medicine under his doctor's care. Enjoying feeling well, he left the family home at age 35, but Joel Cauchy disconnected from his doctor and later deteriorated, becoming homeless and very unwell.
There's a condition with a mental illness where the brain is damaged and it doesn't tell you you're sick. If he was in his right mind, he would be absolutely devastated at what he has done. But he obviously was not in his right mind. He somehow had been triggered into a psychosis and he'd lost touch with reality.
Psychosis and disconnection is a scenario sadly familiar to Sharon Lorne, who supports a loved one with schizophrenia.
Reality can become very distorted for people, troubled by their thoughts, which at times don't make any sense, don't make any rational sense, but they are traumatising for the person. They are completely believed by the person at the time because that's the nature of this condition, particularly when it's not treated.
Sharon Lorne is the Executive Director of Lived Experience Australia.
This is an awful random situation, a symptom of a system where this person clearly was able to fall through the gap.
To fill the gaps in care, advocates have spent decades calling for greater investment from governments. Mental Health Australia's CEO, Carolyn Nikoloski, argues most people with mental illness are not getting the support they need.
In 2020, the Productivity Commission released significant findings into a review of the mental health system. And that report really showed that our mental health system isn't meeting the needs of the community. And the Productivity Commission recommended that governments invest an extra $1.2 billion per year nationally to deliver on priority mental health systems. We still haven't seen that investment from the government.
AM has asked the federal and New South Wales governments for a response.
Any guest reporting, and in a statement to AM, the Federal Health Department said the government had invested an additional $835 million in mental health and is working to reform the system. It was one of Australia's most high-profile defamation cases and ended with defeat for Bruce Lehrman, the man now found on the balance of probabilities of raping Brittany Higgins at a Parliament House office. Mr. Lehrman launched the defamation case against Network 10 and journalist Lisa Wilkinson over their interview with Brittany Higgins after his criminal trial was abandoned with no findings against him. Elizabeth Byrne has been following the case closely. Elizabeth, this was a defamation case, but the judge found rape occurred. What did you make of the verdict?
Well, I'd thought he'd take the middle ground, so I was wrong. And that's because he was so very hard on Brittany Higgins' evidence and critical of evidence that she gave to the court. But in the end, a forensic examination of the evidence from the actual night and the immediate aftermath from some people who were there, some people who talked to the pair afterwards, he decided that, in fact, she had been telling the truth about that and Mr. Lehrman's account had been fanciful.
It's an unusual case. Bruce Lehrman brought this defamation case, and it's unusual that an allegation like this is resolved in a civil action.
It is very unusual. I've only personally covered one other case like this, and that was in a civil jurisdiction where the victim had actually not gone through the criminal jurisdiction and, in fact, sued the person she accused and won quite a substantial sum. So usually you wouldn't see someone who's been accused go in this direction, but it's not unheard of.
Judge Michael Lee was critical of journalists involved in this case. What are the lessons for the media?
Well, if Justice Lee was running the media, we'd give people a lot more time, perhaps, to respond to stories that we might be preparing. But, you know, often you don't because you don't want the competition to know what you're up to. But, you know, injunctions do happen and things get stalled. Then another lesson is don't make a logie speech 8 days out from a trial, because that trial was obviously delayed, and that caused Lisa Wilkinson a lot of trouble because she was blamed for it when really she hadn't been warned, although the judge was still very critical of her, saying she should have known. And the other thing is about the pool of people who would have recognised that it was Bruce Lehrman from the story. Now, that's the critical point. The judges found that the pool of people was large enough that he was defamed. So that's something that we all have to think about as well.
Now, this isn't the end of the case, is it?
No, there's a costs hearing coming. I've asked but not heard back from Bruce Lehrman's camp about whether there might be an appeal. And also, one of the findings was that Bruce Lehrman had handed some material from the trial that should have remained confidential to Seven. It's only a finding on the balance of probabilities in a civil court, but there may be some action on that.
Elizabeth Byrne there. Scientists have announced the world is experiencing its fourth global coral bleaching event. The impacts are severe and widespread, and it's on track to be the worst bleaching event on record. Alexandra Humphreys reports.
This video shows bleached and dead coral spread over a reef on the Caribbean, just one area affected by a mass global bleaching event. It's now been formally declared as the fourth event of its kind overnight by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the United States and the International Coral Reef Initiative. Dirk Manzello is a Coral Reef Watch coordinator.
Significant severe coral bleaching has been reported in at least 54 countries and territories around the globe, since February 2023.
Coral bleaching happens when ocean temperatures surpass a threshold that corals can tolerate, driven primarily by greenhouse gas emissions and climate change.
So it's likely that in a few weeks' time, this event will officially be the most spatially extensive global coral bleaching event on record.
Australia's Great Barrier Reef is especially vulnerable.
This announcement overnight drives home that no reef anywhere in the world is safe from the impacts of climate change.
It's the fifth mass bleaching event to hit the Great Barrier Reef in 8 years. Richard Leck is the head of oceans for WWF Australia.
What we're hearing overnight is that more than 50% of reefs globally are experiencing bleaching. What we do absolutely know is that bleaching events are becoming more frequent and more severe.
At this stage, it's just too early to know what the impact will be on the barrier reef.
At the moment, we understand there's severe bleaching across much of the reef. Certainly in the southern part of the Great Barrier Reef, scientists have described it as the worst bleaching on record. But we're also seeing coral bleaching across the entire length of the 2,500 kilometres of the Great Barrier Reef, which is unprecedented.
Lisa Schindler is from the Australian Marine Conservation Society.
This is one of the worst bleaching events on record. The worst one that we saw was in 2016, where we had 30% mortality of corals. We won't know for a couple of months yet and what sort of mortality we're going to see. But we do know that this is the longest that corals have been exposed in some areas to this level of heat stress. And we're seeing bleaching across multiple species. So we will see mortality across multiple species.
This is the fourth global mass bleaching event after previous ones in 1998, 2010 and 2014 to 2017. All have coincided with an El Niño climate pattern.
Alexandra Humphreys reporting. The first criminal trial of a former United States president is underway, with jury selection starting in Donald Trump's so-called hush money case in New York. It's the first of four cases against Mr. Trump to proceed to trial and might be the only one that happens before this year's presidential election. North America correspondent Jade McMillan reports.
No one is above the law.
Waving American flags and handmade signs, small groups of Donald Trump's supporters and his critics waited outside the Manhattan courthouse where the historic trial is being heard.
I wanted to show support for President Trump in a public way. I think it's important that when something so unfair is happening right here, that people support him.
We believe that Alvin Bragg has a good case and that there will be a fair jury of New Yorkers there to judge the information and the law.
The former president is charged with 34 counts of falsifying business records. Prosecutors allege he tried to cover up a payment made in the lead-up to the 2016 election to buy the silence of porn star Stormy Daniels, who claims to have had a sexual encounter with him. Mr. Trump denies the relationship and has pleaded not guilty to all of the charges. And on his way into court, he continued to criticise the merits of the case.
People that don't necessarily follow or like Donald Trump said this is an outrage that this case was brought. This is political persecution.
He was in the courtroom as the judge addressed around 100 potential jurors, telling them they must set aside any personal attitudes about the defendant. Dozens were excused after indicating they couldn't be impartial. Others were asked a series of questions on topics like the type of news they consume and whether they'd ever attended a pro or anti-Trump rally. Settling on the final 12 jury members could take at least a week. And while New York City is considered a Democratic stronghold, former federal prosecutor Mitchell Epner is confident in the process.
I think that it is very inappropriate to say he can't get a fair trial. As somebody who's been trying cases for a very long time, the ability of jurors to be fair and to judge based upon what they see in front of them during the trial has frequently amazed me.
If he's convicted in New York, the now presumptive Republican nominee wouldn't technically be prevented from running for the White House again. But it could weigh on voters as they prepare to make up their minds in November. This is Jade McMillan in Washington, reporting for AM.
That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. It was a judgment watched closely across the country as Justice Michael Lee meticulously outlined his ruling in the defamation case brought by Bruce Lehrman, leading to a dramatic finding against the former Liberal staffer that on the balance of probabilities, he raped Brittany Higgins. Today, we step through the civil judgment with court reporter Patrick Bell. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.